Okay. Right, so we're coming up to Parshat Tetzave this week. Of course, it's going to be Purim, Motzei Shabbat, after Shabbat. Did you get the thing about the Purim party here? Yes, Saturday night?
Yes, I might be in Bristol because my niece is singing in the choir.
Oh, well.
On Sunday.
Okay, lovely.
To see if I
get
on Friday, if not, I'll.
Okay. Okay, so, but this discourse is basically about something which is in the Sedra of the week, about the ephod and the breastplate of judgment, the Choshen Mishpat, and it links into Purim as well. So it was originally said in 1966, and it's a non-edited discourse, but it came out in the Dvar Malchut for this week, in this pointed text and with a commentary. So if we just look at the text from the Chumash, which is on the first page, so we got verse 6. So it's describing the clothes of the Kohanim. They should make the ephod. Now the ephod you see in the diagram below on the left-hand side. And you see it wraps behind, it's like an apron that wraps behind and ties in the front. And it's
Do you want more light, Tully?
I think the main thing about it for the purpose of this discourse is the way it wraps it, it's a garment that goes behind, like Rashi says it's like a riding apron. A riding apron, in other words, what a person would wear sitting on a horse. So it's at the back and they sit on the horse.
Yeah, I opened it.
And the oh wow!
Oh, yes. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, very well done.
That's incredible.
Yes. So here, it see it goes behind, and then you have these two straps behind, which come over one's shoulders to the front, and there's an onyx stone on each of these straps, and on the onyx stone is engraved the names of the Jewish people, six of them on one stone and six of them on the other. So that's the ephod, and it goes through various kinds of wool, precious metal, which is gold, blue wool, purple wool, talat shani, red wool, v'sheish mashzah, and fine linen, ma'ase choshev. It's a tapestry which has been woven. It's a woven work with it's woven with a beautiful design. Shteich teifot chovrot yelo el shneik tzotav chuba. And then it speaks about these two shoulder straps. So these are the two shoulder straps. V'cheshev afudato ashalav k'maseh mimeni yen. It's got a kind of a belt going round, which is also similar. Zahav tchelet v'agaman, gold, blue wool, purple wool, v'tolat shani v'shesh mashza, and scarlet and white linen. V'lakachta et shtei avnei shoham, and you should take two onyx stones. Ufitachta aleim, and you should engrave on them Shemot b'nei Yisrael, the names of the Jewish people. Shisha mishmotam ala evan ha'achat, six of their names on one stone. Ve'et shmot ha'shisha notarim, and the other six names ala evan ha'sheinit ketoldatam, on the second stone. according to the way they were called when they were born. Maase Charash, Charash, a work of engraving, Evan into the stone, Pituchei Chotam, like you engrave a signet ring, Tefatach et Shtei Avanim, you should engrave these two stones, Al Shemot B'nei Yisrael, by the names of the Jewish people, Musabot Mishpatzot Zahav, and they are set in golden settings, Ta'aseh Otam, that's how you should make them. And you should put the two stones on the shoulder pieces of the ephod. Avnei zikaron livnei Yisrael. They are stones of memory of the Jewish people. V'nasa Aaron et shmotam lifnei Hashem. And Aaron should carry their names before God. Al shtei ketefav, on his two shoulders. Lizikaron, as a remembrance. Now then it goes on and speaks about two chains, and the point is, I'm not sure if he goes on to describe, you see, then there's the Choshen Mishpat. So from these two shoulder pieces, now in front of him come two chains, and the two chains hold the breastplate of judgment. And the breastplate of judgment also has the names of the B'nai Israel, but it's done in a different way. There are 12 precious stones, and each precious stone has got one of the names engraved. So over here, for the ephod, you have two stones which have six names on each, and then the breastplate of judgment at the front has got 12 stones and one name on each. So this is basically what the discourse is exploring, the relationship between the ephod and the breastplate of judgment, and how this relates to us today. So the melody of the Maimah melody. Oh, yamba, ya, yamba, yomba, bo, ya, yamba, yamba, bo. Yamba, 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 yombo. Hayre lamba, hayre lamba, yomba. Ya, yamba, 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 yomba. Hayre lamba, hayre lamba, ya, yamba, 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 yamba. Okay, so we're on page Hey, at the beginning of the actual discourse, which is on the next page. You need to... No, that's actually the last page, right? Yeah, there. You've got the first page. Lahavin inyan choshen ve'efod, to understand the concept of the choshen, of the breastplate, and the ephod. Shegabe Eifod Ktiv, about the Eifod it says, V'nasa Aaron et Shmotam, Aaron should carry their names, Lifnei Hashem, before God, Al Shtei Ktefav Lizikaron, on his two shoulders for a memory. V'chein Gabe HaChoshen Ktiv, and also concerning the breastplate, it says a similar phrase, V'nasa Aaron et Shmot B'nei Yisrael, Aaron should carry the names of the children of Israel, al libo, on his heart, lezikaron lifnei Hashem, as a memory before God. Ukuf Shmedaik, the Rebbe de Tzemach Tzedek, that's the third Lubavitch Rebbe, shetzarich lahavin, miss out the brackets, shetzarich lahavin, we have to understand, ta'am achiluk bein ha'efod lachoshen, the reason for the distinction between the ephod and the choshen, and the breastplate. Shebe'efod ha'yushmot yud beit ha'shvatim. On the ephod, the names of the 12 tribes, rakal shtei avanim, were on two stones, two onyx stones. Kumo shekatuv, as it's written, shisha mishmotam al evan achat, six of their names on one stone, ve'et shmot ha'shisha notarim al evan ha'shenit, and the names of the six others on the second stone. Uvachoshen, but on the breastplate, ha'yushmot yud beit ha'shvatim al yud beit avanim. The names of the 12 tribes were on 12 precious stones. V'gam, and also b'choshen ha'yiru chol shevet min evan acher. On the breastplate, every tribe had a different kind of precious stone. Le Reuven Odem, Reuven, for example, had a ruby. Le Yosef Shoham, Joseph had onyx. Olavinyanim Yashper, and Benjamin had another kind of stone that's, what do we call Yashper? So it calls it jasper. Okay, it's actually quite similar. Jasper. But yes. He explains it, opaque quartz. So that's the main stone. So there we have different kinds of stone. So the 12 stones on the breastplate are 12 different stones, whereas on the ephod there are two stones of the same type, shtei avnei shoham, usually translated as onyx. We also have to understand, why is this whole idea double? The nesiat shemot b'nei Yisrael al yedei Aaron lezikaron. Aaron is wearing these names of the Jewish people twice. Hein al ktefo ba'efod, whether on his shoulders, on the ephod, or on his heart, like the choshen, like the breastplate. Okay, so you see, the idea is that everything in the Torah is not just that that's how it was thousands of years ago. It must have some significance for us as well. And so first of all, we're exploring what it was then in spiritual terms, and then how that applies to us. So that's Bet. And the basic concept here is the neklalut hachiluk bein ha'efod le'choshen hu. The general difference between the ephod and the breastplate is sha'ephod, that the ephod sha'haya Aaron chogem acharov, which Aaron wore round his back, hu bechinat achorayim, relates to the back. You see, there's a word in Hebrew representing the back, the in general. V'hachoshen, and the breastplate sha'haya alibo, which was on his heart, ubechinat panim, is the front and the back. The inyano ba'avoda, and what this means in service of God, sha'efod more al avoda shibechinat achor. The ephod represents the service which has got the quality of the back. As it's written, Acharei Hashem Elokechem Telechu, you should go after the Lord your God. In other words, there is a form of service where you're going behind godliness in some sense. Like God says to Moses, you will see my back, but not my front. So the idea of front and back in Kabbalistic terms, it's a theme which is often there, the idea of face to face or back to back, the whole idea of the relationship, or face towards back. That's so what kind of relationship is this with the divine? So the relationship with the divine, which is termed back, he's now defining it as it might relate to us, shehi avoda bifchinat itkafya bilvad. That is the service which has got this quality of itkafya alone. Now, itkafya means self-control. There are different kinds of service. And one is self-control. And that is something which is a very important, you know, when you consider what the Ten Commandments are, you know, most of them are about self-control, not doing something that a person might want to do and holding himself back. And what does that mean, a service of self-control? Haynu shelon nepach libo mitavot olam hazeh. The person's heart has not been transformed from the desires of this world. That means in a negative way, in an inappropriate way. V'adayin ein lo chefetz u'tshuka v'lelokut. And he doesn't yet have a yearning and longing for godliness. See, the yearning and longing for godliness, that's the avodah, that's the service in the way of the front. That is looking towards God from the front, as it were, looking towards the front aspect of the divine with yearning, with enthusiasm, with inspiration. But the service towards the back is a service where there isn't that inspiration, and what there is self-control, holding oneself back from doing something negative. Or might be not only not doing something negative, it might be doing something positive, but having to force oneself. The person has to force himself to do the thing that needs to be done. He doesn't feel this high inspirational feeling that this is how it's got to be. Of course, you know, no question. He says, oh no, I've got to do that. You know, a completely different kind of emotion. So that's what the ephod represents. The ephod represents the avodah, that service of God, which is a kind of struggle, whether it's a struggle to hold oneself back or it's a struggle to positively do the right thing, but it's something which comes out of struggle. V'choshen, but the breastplate, more al avodah shebefchina tidhavcha. That represents the service which is one of transformation. Shenitapchu amidot denevsha bahamid, the emotions of the animal soul have been transformed, liyot kafi mahut madrigat nefesh olekit, so that they become something like the quality of the divine soul. Shavodazu hi bechinat panim, and this kind of service is called the service of the face, the face-to-face kind of service, rather than the service of the back. Yet now, the point is the divine soul is always inspired. It may not reveal itself, it may not be able to express itself, it may be squashed by the animal soul. But the attributes of the divine soul are always focused on the divine. The animal soul is different. And what this discourse is describing is that the ephod and the choshen both relate to the animal soul. But in the breastplate part of it, at the front, that's the animal soul as it is inspired. And the ephod, which is at the back, is the animal soul before it's been inspired, and we just have to try and get it to do or not to do whatever is the right action that it should or shouldn't do. V'inyan nesiyad Aaron et shmod b'nei Yisrael ala ephod v'choshen. And the idea that Aaron should carry the names of the Jewish people on both the ephod and the breastplate, who hanetinat koach livnei Yisrael, is giving empowerment to the Jewish people al shnei ofanei avodah, on these two kinds of service. It's as if the fact that Aaron wears these names, which is our names as the Jewish people, he's giving us the strength, whether it is for the service of control, of forcing oneself, v'edhafcha, or the service of inspiration. So it comes from Aaron. Now there's another image in the Torah which is also about Aaron bringing inspiration to the Jewish people, and that's what is described here in the brackets. Va'al derech inyan ha'alat ha'neirot shal yedei Aaron, similar to the idea of the raising of the lights. That means there's the menorah, the seven-branch menorah in the temple, and there's the lighting of the menorah, and Aaron does this every day. And the term used for lighting the lamps is raising the lights. Now, you could understand that when he lights the flame rises up. But this is interpreted in Kabbalistic and Hasidic literature as meaning the inspiration that Aaron imparts to the Jewish people. The menorah with its seven branches represents the entire Jewish people with the seven different sfirot, representing seven different approaches to the divine, which each person has within them, or different kinds of people. And Aaron illuminates them. Now this illumination of the menorah, Eilish Pu'ulata Alata Nerot, this effect, we're on line 11. This effect of lighting the lamps, hubanagel and nefshelokit, that concerns the divine soul. Upulat nesiyad ephod v'choshen, and the other thing that Aaron does, wearing these stones with the names of the Jewish people on the ephod, the breastplate, hubanagel the beiru nefesh abahamit, concerns the elevation and transformation of the animal soul. So the menorah represents the divine soul, bringing inspiration to the divine soul. And the fact that he's wearing the ephod and the choshen, the ephod and the breastplate, that has an effect on the Jewish people, enabling them to arouse their animal soul. On the one hand, to do the thing that's difficult at that moment, or to be inspired itself, that the animal soul itself can be inspired about a divine thing.
Is all this happening through Aaron rather than because of Aaron? He's not doing, he's like a catalyst, or it's coming through the Choshen or the...
Yeah, he's a channel. Effort.
He's a channel, yeah.
He's a channel. I mean, that's the way tzaddikim are in relation to the Jewish people.
Mm.
They function as a kind of channel, which enables the Jewish people to have a stronger connection to the divine.
Mm.
It's, you know, that's. But here, it's actually something that he's doing. He, you know, the fact that he's wearing these stones with the names of the Jewish people, that is what channels this kind of energy.
Mm.
Like, it reminds me of the there's a siddur that the Baal Shem Tov had, and this siddur exists, and it's in the Lubavitch Library in New York, and I think the siddur is basically, it's a handwritten siddur anyway, much of it, or maybe the whole of it, but what it's got in it also are the names of the disciples of the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov would look at these names and like think about while he was praying, as it were, to draw inspiration to them as well. So you could say in that the Baal Shem Tov is a channel for that kind of energy flowing to his disciples. You know, I'm sure it had an effect on his disciples, you know, the fact that he looked at their names while he was praying. So it would help. And so here we have this as well, through our...
And his rod, the flowering rod, with the almond. They all have their names written on the rods, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Although there, the fact that his rod flowered showed that he represents the priesthood rather than everyone else.
Yes.
Whereas here, he is including everyone else. So with the rods, it was when there was an argument, who should be the priest? Should it be Korach or should it be Aaron? And so Aaron's rod flowered. But then comes the positive effect that he's having on everyone, which is here, the fact that he's wearing everyone's name. Now, line 13. V'hainu shalom yibayi. שכאשר נמצאים בעבודה שבבחינת אחריים, בבחינת התקפיה. It's not just that when we're in a situation of the back, the quality of self-control, that we need the effect of Aaron. See, if we've got a struggle about Judaism, about positive action, positive thoughts, it's very, very helpful if there is a figure who is aiding us in that sense. I was looking today at historical material, so I found some interesting descriptions of Hasidic Rebbeim of the 19th century or early 20th century. So someone was describing the Munkacher Rebbe, and he said, just watching him, like he would do a, like, he had a certain routine during the day, and so this person is trying to describe what his routine was like. So there was a certain point he would be studying something. So maybe he was studying things a lot of the time, but there was a particular item that he would be studying at this particular moment. So the person writing said, just watching the Munkacher Rebbe studying this material made you feel that there's a God in the world. You know, like the way you studied Torah made you feel that God is giving the Torah and here is someone studying the Torah. You could feel that tangibly. It reminded me the first time I went to see the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the first Shabbat seeing the Rebbe davening, you could feel that the Rebbe was davening to God. You know, like God was very, very tangible. It's the Rebbe was actually davening to God, that closeness. And so the fact that you have this Aaron figure, yes, you see both Moshe and Aaron represent the tzaddikim who give us inspiration. So you can understand that you need that when Judaism is a struggle. You have an inspiring figure who helps a person go forward despite the struggle dimension. That's very often the role of the Lubavitch Rebbe was precisely that. People had a problem with this aspect of Judaism or that aspect of Judaism, and they would come to the Rebbe to and they would tell their problem, and the Rebbe would say something encouraging, hi, which would help them master the situation, which would help them get over the block. My wife was once interviewed, and they asked her, what is a Rebbe? What is a Hasidic Rebbe? So she said, he's like a plumber. You have something caught up in the system and it doesn't work, and the plumber comes along and he goes bang bang and it all starts working. That's you know, in other words, dealing with this, that's the quality of Aaron over here. Kamo shekatuv v'nasa Aaron et shmotam lifnei Hashem, that it's written that Aaron carries their names before God, al shteik teifav lezikaron, on his two shoulders for a memory. So that's what he's doing. Now, it doesn't explain this, but it could be that it's our memory. We're the ones that get reminded. I'm not sure if that's... so that could be a way... that he's carrying the names on his shoulders. You see, the shoulders represent something less sensitive about the person compared with the heart. Yes, the heart is a seat of inspiration. So the shoulders are less sensitive, but nonetheless, on the shoulders are the names, so that it should be for a memory that they should have this connection with the divine. And it's tempting to look at it. It's their memory. It's not that God remembers them, it's that they remember God. So that might be a slightly poetic license in interpreting that way, but I think it's a reasonable idea, that he's carrying the names on his shoulders so that the Jewish people in those names, that's us, the Jewish people, should remember the divine and be woken up to the extent that we're able to do what has to be done, even though we're still at the point of achoraim, of the back. Now that, you can understand that you need the effect of a spiritual input. Elegam kashenim tzaim b'avodah, but also, when one is in a state of service, shebeprinat panim, of the face, the not the back, but the front, bechinat hithafcha, the quality of transformation, it's line 18 on page 1. The quality of transformation, it says there too, about the breastplate of judgment, k'tiv v'nasa Aaron et shemot b'nei Yisrael, Aaron should carry the names of the children of Israel, alibo on his heart, lezikaron lifnei Hashem, as a memory before God, lahalotam lifnei Hashem, to raise them up before God. Now, when it says lifnei Hashem, that's interpreted in Hasidic thought, lemailo mailo mebchinat shem havaya, even higher than the name Yudke Vavke. You see, because the idea is that you have the Ein Sof. Are you okay with Hebrew letters? Yeah. Yeah. So you have Ein Sof, you have the infinite here, and then you have, I'm writing it as Yud Dalad Vav Dalad. Now, so these are like the Sfirot coming down, and then you have the flow of energy into the world. Now, so when you're speaking about raising something Lifnei, before Yudke Vavke, it means elevating it to a higher point beyond the Yudke Vavke dimension. So that's what happens with the Choshen Mishpat, with the breastplate of judgment, that it's carrying the person spiritually to a very exalted level, even higher than the name Yudke Vavke, because the name Yudke Vavke represents the structure of the Sfirot. Yud is wisdom, and then the He is Bina, understanding. The Vav is six, which is the six Sfirot, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, kindness, severity, mercy, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, victory, submission, and foundation. And then the next He is Malchut, is kingship. So that flows down. But here the person is being raised higher than that through the breastplate of judgment, which is on the on which Aaron is wearing.
So can only Aaron get to that level?
He imparts it to us. By the fact that he is wearing the breastplate of judgment, in other words, with our names on it, he is a channel for an energy, an empowerment, which enables us, if we're able to reach that kind of service, which can carry us to that higher level. So we as individuals also reach that higher level. We have that possibility, you know. Very often we're at a point where we're just struggling at the bottom of the ladder. Yes, but it is possible for a person to be inspired, and the idea of inspiring our animal soul, quite apart from the inspiration of the divine soul. The divine soul comes from the essence, so the divine soul is very exalted anyway, and that can operate inside us. But here, it's a matter of inspiring our animal soul, and that can also be inspired.
Why the Dalit?
I'm writing Dalit instead of Hey, because I don't want, just not to write the divine name.
Just not like arbitrary,
I
see.
Yeah. And so one convention is to write a Dalit, because Yudod means a beloved one. So, like Lecha Dodi.
Yes.
Okay, so now we have on page Zayin, the next page, paragraph Gimel. Va'al pize yuvanatam, and because of this, according to this, we can understand the reason. Shebachoshen haita l'chol shevet even miyuchedet b'fnei atzma, that on the breastplate, each one had each tribe had a particular precious stone. And these precious stones were separate and different in the kind of stone, the color of the stone. Lefigavan hadgalim, according to the color of the flags. There was a relationship between the color of the flags of each tribe and the color of the precious stone on the breastplate of judgment. The kevan shin yana choshen, since the idea of the breastplate concerns the service of transformation and inspiration, which means sifting through, transforming all the detailed aspects, the different kind of qualities and powers of the animal soul, which are being transformed to light. Lachen kol echad ve'echad, therefore each individual one, chaluk is different, bigvano v'taro, in its color and the way it looks. Interesting. So in order to transform it, to bring out this transformation of the darkness of the animal soul into the radiance of enthusiasm and light, so you have to deal with each little aspect of the animal soul individually. And so, Hainu Lufi Ofen Mahuto Madrigato, according to its quality and its level, Sheba Ofen Kazer, because it's in this way, Harehu Mitapech Lo Or V'Tov, that's the way you can transform it into radiance and goodness. Vahainu, and that means Shavodazu, that in this style of service, Hiba Ofen Shekol Shevet V'Shevet, that every single tribe, b'msilato ya'aleh, goes on its own path. Now, you see, on the one hand, there's every single tribe, And on the other hand, you've got within the individual different qualities, and these different qualities are being transformed into light. But the interesting thing is that in terms of this kind of transformation, you have to work with each individual in a very, very individual way, right? This could go into my shiurim, my lecture on individualism. In order to get this kind of inspiration, you need a very delicate approach to the individual. It's interesting. See, when you say no, which is like the it kafya, that's the quelling, that's the self-control. And just as the no, so one might take this no, you know, it can be in a very blanket, general way. You just say no, and okay, so we're a person that's got this quality or that quality. As long as they appreciate that no is no, then they don't cross over the fence. But if you want to bring out from someone a deeper level of inspiration, then it's not enough just a simple blanket quality. Then you have to appeal to each individual. So while that's the structure that's being described here, you know, you could suggest that in order to say no in a secular world, you also have to inspire the person. You can't, saying no is not enough, you know. In fact, stolen water is sweet. If you say no, it just makes the thing more attractive. So you have to be able to inspire the person that they should be able to say no and say, I'm not going to do that, or because, you know, not just that it's written that it's wrong, it's got to be some deeper quality. So there's a kind of an interplay between two features of the psyche here. One is the quality of being able to just exercise a control or a rigorous forcing of what one is doing, like the Windows 7, it's got this new bit of vocabulary that the previous Windows didn't have. Do you want to force shutdown? You know, previously it like, you know, ahmed and ahd, you know, but here's, do you want to force? You know, so there's this forcing. That's the effort, and in the F of the effort, you know, the forcing. Whereas the heart of the breastplate and the feeling is one of inspired action. But sometimes for the forcing, you also have to inspire, you know, so you may have to mingle these two dimensions when you're trying to deal with any particular individual. And also the way you have to be able to relate to the individual in order to bring most out of them. You have to consider each one as like a jewel, and their name and who they are individually as a particular person who is not the same as anyone else, and each, and to be able to make them feel where they are in the whole equation.
When you said that you have to deal with each one individually, I thought at first you meant the each individual part of the one person, like the animal soul, the back one, the front, and
I think that's
self.
True as well.
Yeah.
I think that there is you know, what he's saying here will apply to that as well. That within each individual there are different qualities, and you have to be able to deal with that each quality within that person. Mm. You know, so there's a creative quality, there's an emotional quality, there's an intellectual quality. You have to be able to take each dimension and satisfy it, and make it feel that it is being spoken to. This reminds me of actually, it's one of the texts we look at in the course. At the very beginning of Tanya by Rabbi Schneur Zalman, he speaks about a person's relationship with the Torah. And he says, really, there are 600,000 roots in the Torah for every individual Jew. Each Jew has their own individual root. The problem is people don't know where their root is. They don't know where their place is in the Torah. And so therefore, they might feel, you know, well, it's, you know, it's just talking in general terms. It's not talking to me. And the idea of discovering that face, that aspect of the Torah, where it's talking to me as an individual. Like Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, he has this little routine which he says, what is the difference between a rabbi and a rebbe? A rabbi speaks to 500 people, and whatever he's saying, each person thinks, he's talking to the other person, not to me. And a rebbe, a Hasidic rebbe, speaks to 5,000 people, and each person thinks he's talking just to me.
Yeah, that's very nice.
I'm very much borne out in experience. You know, I've often heard people say, you know, I was in a certain Hasidic gathering with the rebbe, and the rebbe was speaking, and he was talking just to me, you know, and I couldn't understand how it would be relevant to anyone else there, but I knew that the rebbe was saying this to me.
Yeah. I've been to shiurim like that in Jerusalem, and I've just thought that, and then other people go up to the speaker at the end, and they all say, they just...
That's beautiful. That's very
beautiful.
There's
actually Aviva Sornberg, do you know?
Oh, Aviva? Right, yeah. Right.
And it happened quite regularly.
Lovely, very lovely. That's very nice indeed. Yeah, she's written a very nice book. It's or several. Right. So so v'lachein, we're on line 9 on page Zion. V'lachein, and therefore hayu yud beit havanim, there were 12 stones corresponding to the 12 tribes, sheheim yud beit gvulei alachson, which are the 12 diagonals. Like this is something spoken about with the Sfirot. There are the between the 6 Sfirot, you can crisscross them, as it were, making them connect with each other, and it comes out to 12 lines, 12 diagonals connecting the 6 Sfirot with each other. Ukmo shegam achshav yesh 12 sharim, just as now too there are 12 gates. The Aliyat Tfilat Kol Shevet, for the ascending of the prayer of every tribe, B'Shah Ham Yuchad Elav, through its own particular gate. The idea being there were 12 gates in the temple, and the 12 tribes each had their own gate, and the prayers have a go through a particular gate, and this is understood as the different nusra'ot, the Ashkenazi style, the Sfaradi style, and each of those have a few different varieties. So these are like the twelve gates of prayer.
How did the 10 sefirot there relate into with the 12 tribes? You just said the
I think it's the six. I think it's the 6 sefirot, which become like the combination. I think, let's just see how it works. So if we have, I'll just do this. Chesed, Gvura, Teferes, Netzach, Oid, Yesod. So I think here, you see there are lines which connect. And I think we start off with that at the end. Over here. Yes. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I see.
Okay. Yeah, so there are 12 connecting lines. You often see this diagram. It's like in Kabbalistic books, you know.
Yeah.
So these 12 connecting lines, so it's interesting. That the each shevet is like a connecting line, each tribe is like a connecting line within the sefirot.
Yes.
So the role of the Jew is not so much being a sefirah, but connecting something spiritually. Mm. And that's what we're each of us doing. We're making that connection.
Thank you.
And so ubebchat yod yoter, line 12, he's got a thing in brackets. Hine, in more detail, peshem shiyved ha-shvatim nechleku le'aba machanot, the 12 tribes were divided in 4 camps. Ubechol machane shlosha shvatim. And in each camp there were 3 tribes. Now, you see there was the sanctuary in the desert, And around the sanctuary were the tribes. Here's the sanctuary in the middle, this way. And then you had three tribes round each point, round the sanctuary. This is described in the Book of Numbers, at the beginning of the Book of Numbers, Bamidbar, exactly the pattern, and which tribes, which three would be here, which there, you know, according to the points of the compass around the sanctuary. And then you had the Levites, who were at three points. There are three groups of Levites and Moshe and Aaron. And so you have this sort of circular formation with four groups of three. So that four groups of three relates to the fact, Kach gam avnei achoshen nechlukul la'arba turim. So too the stones, the precious stones on the breastplate, were divided in four rows. Uvechol tur shalosha avanim. And on shalosh avanim, and on each row there were three. So here we have four rows. I suppose we would call them columns in Excel. but so it's four columns. And in each column, it's four rows. Yeah, what we call rows. Yeah. Four rows going down. And in each row there are three jewels. Yes. Yeah. So a very famous version of the Code of Law was called the Four Rows. And that became the pattern for the Code of Law, for the Shulchan Aruch. It was based on the Four Rows written in the 14th century. And he divided Jewish life into four categories. Daily life, extra special questions like kashrut, things to do with marriage, and things to do with business. So that's the four areas of life. And it's in that way that the Code of Law followed the same pattern of... So it's called the Four Rows after this breastplate. Masha'en came be ephod, which is not the case when we're talking about the ephod, b'chinat achor, which is at the back, 15. The quality of service from the back. It's just talking about self-control or forcing oneself. There you don't have a particular stone, an individual stone for each tribe, which indicates the details of the level of the divine soul in that tribe. Shaharia Evan Shua Nevsha Bahamit, because the stone which is the animal soul, Lonid Hapcha Adain, has not yet been transformed, Likalel Vliyot, to be absorbed and become like Kafima Hut Nevsha Likit Mamash, to become like the divine soul. He's putting together, in the case of the breastplate, the animal soul becomes like the divine soul. So therefore the particularism really begins with the divine soul, but it extends to the animal soul. The animal soul is somehow transformed so that it fits in with the divine soul. Whereas when you're talking about forcing, so that's just the animal soul by itself being forced, and so therefore it hasn't got the same kind of individual dimension. It's... There is here only the empowerment to do this work of quelling. Which looks like, for all of them, it is the same. Therefore, all the 12 tribes, they were on one kind of stone. They were on the onyx stone. Both the stones on the shoulders of Aaron, of the high priest, were onyx, one type of stone. And the reason why the stones of the ephod were particularly onyx, who is, the power that there should be this control, ba'ofen shelit kafya, of forcing oneself to do something or not to do something, tzarich liyot nimshach mimakom elyon biyoter, has to be drawn from a more exalted place. Now that's a very interesting point. The inyan, that in order to have the power to control oneself or force oneself, you actually need a higher level of power. Once you're inspired, it's very easy. And you don't need that much spiritual input. You're switched on, okay, lovely. But to hold oneself back, you need a very exalted kind of power. And that recognition is, I think, a very beautiful point. Because you have to be connected at some kind of higher level in order to have that strength to say no, or to force oneself to say yes. And so, ve'inyan ze merumaz ba'avnei ha'shoham, and this is hinted at by the fact that it's onyx stone. Ki shoham, because the word shoham, otiot Moshe, it's got the same letters as the word Moshe, Moses. All the time we've been talking about Aaron. But suddenly we come to Moses. Sha'al yado davka nimshach ha'koach, it's through him particularly that there is drawn down this power, la'avodah ditkafya, to do the service of forcing, of quelling, of self-control, of making oneself do something or not do something. V'od zot, then there's another point. She'evan ha'shoen ba'avnei ha'choshen, there is actually an onyx stone among the 12 stones on the breastplate as well. Huba Evan, Evan de Yosef. It's the Evan of, it's the stone of Joseph. Joseph has got an onyx stone. Now, why is that? Vahari madregat Yosef hu lemaile mi madregat hashvatim. In fact, Joseph is higher than the other tribes. Shenishmato mibchinat Yehuda ila datzilut. The soul of Joseph comes from a much more exalted level, the upper unity of Atzilut. Whereas the Mashein Ken Shashvatim, whereas the other tribes, Heima Olam Abriya, they're from the world of Briya, of creation. So Joseph is from the world of emanation, and the other tribes are from the world of creation. And that's the whole drama of Joseph and the tribes in the story in the Torah. Umisham Nimshach HaKoch LaVodah Ditkafya. And from him comes the strength of the service of quelling. And of course, in the story of Joseph with Potiphar's wife, you have the story of quelling, of self-control, and that is what is transmitted to the Jewish people through the generations. Right. So here we have this interplay between the way in which we relate to the divine in such a way that we that there's a quality of forcing, which might be standing up against some kind of pressure. You see, very often the reason why we have to force ourselves is because there's a flow. You go with the flow, or there's a tendency to go with the flow. So everyone is doing something around. So how do you stand up against it? In order to do that, you have to have a strong inner force to stand up against the flow. So that quality of standing up against the flow, that comes from Moshe. That is the higher dimension which comes from Moshe. Whereas, when you're talking about the breastplate of Aaron, that is the inspiration of the animal soul, which, although it's something very beautiful, it doesn't need such a high level of input. Now, it's at this point that we come to the connection with Purim, right? So that's page Chet, paragraph Dalet. V'yesh lo hosif, and one can add, sh'al derech ze matzinu, that we find something similar b'inyan milchemet Amalek, concerning the battle against Amalek. K'mavo b'drushei parshat Zachor, as is mentioned in the Hasidic teachings about the extra section that will be read this Shabbat. This Shabbat there'll be an extra Torah scroll, second Torah scroll, and we'll read there about remembering Amalek. And the point about remembering Amalek, the Shabbat before Purim, is because Haman came from Amalek. It says in the Megillah, Haman ha'agagi, Agag was the king of Amalek in the time of King Saul. So really the whole story of Purim is about Mordechai. See, there are different ways of seeing what is the focus of the story. But a very important way of understanding it is that Mordechai is standing up to the pressure exerted by Haman. Haman wants everyone to bow to him. Haman wants to be the idol and everyone will succumb and give in and bow to this idol. The Talmud in Tractate Megillah says either Haman thought he himself was the idol or he wore an idol on his chest. But it's the sense of everyone succumbing to that pressure to fit in with idolatry. Now, the Mordechai, lo yichreve, lo yishtachave. Mordechai would not bow and he wouldn't kneel, he wouldn't prostrate himself, he wouldn't do that. And that is what got Haman all angry and wanting to destroy the whole Jewish people. But the Jewish people themselves wouldn't. They also resisted the idea of converting to Haman's religion and taking Haman as their god. There was that possibility, it says in Kabbalistic and Hasidic teachings. There was that possibility for the Jewish people, but they rejected it. And so therefore, and it was Mordechai, by his example, who was imparting that strength of character, not to bow down, not to go with the flow, not to stand up against it. Everyone is doing something, and you stand up against that thing, which is a major challenge in the secularized lifestyle that people live today, to be able to say no and to start doing something else. I remember once someone I knew very well, the tremendous challenge they went through beginning to eat kosher. you know, it wasn't just taste buds, it was a whole issue of lifestyle and, you know, what it means going to an expensive West End restaurant where a film star might come in or a famous politician, you know, and sort of giving that up, because however good the food might be in some Golden Screen restaurant, no film, you know, very rarely will a film star or you know, the Prime Minister is not going to come. Well, maybe that could be arranged. But so that's the challenge. And so what the Rebbe is saying here is that you need the input from Moshe in order to be able to stand up against Amalek. So what is happening? Shabbat Seit, line 15, at the end of the line, Shabbat Seit b'nei Yisrael mitzrayim. When the Jewish people came out of Egypt, haytai etzlam avodah b'vchinat achoraim. In fact, their service was of the kind that is called behind, the back. Shezoy avodah ditkafya, the service of forcing. There's a phrase used in the Torah when it talks about the Jews going out of Egypt. They fled. The people fled. Why did they have to flee? Because the bad in the souls of the Jewish people was still very powerful. You see, they lived in Egypt. They'd acquired all kinds of Egyptian lifestyle. They served idols like the Egyptians. They did other bad things like the Egyptians. And so therefore, for them to leave this behind was very difficult. And in fact, it was all still there inside them. There's the idea that you could get the Jew out of Egypt, but it's not easy to get the Egypt out of the Jew. Mm-hmm. So they still had the Egypt inside them. Their service was simply in a way of forcing. That's why Amalek was able to fight against them, because they were just in a way of forcing, and so therefore Amalek had the power to attack them. There's a little commentary on this, line 8 of the commentary, if you can see on the right hand side. Someone who's transformed his animal soul from darkness to light and his service is in a way of idhafcha, of transformation, then the negative quality of Amalek is not able to have any effect on him. But if the person hasn't achieved that inner transformation, then they are subject to negative forces. Vazelshem, so back in the text, and we're finishing over here. We're not going into the last two paragraphs. Vazelshem Milchemet Amalek Haita Tzricha Liot Al Yedei Anshe Moshe Davka. That's why the battle against Amalek had to be carried out by the men of Moshe, the followers of Moshe, which is discussed in Hasidic thought. As we said above, Kamul El Shakoch Labodadit Kafya, that the power of the service of quelling Tzarich Liot Nimshach Mimakom Elyon Biyoter has to come from a more exalted level, has to come from this higher dimension that Moshe empowers them from a more exalted level. So there's some sort of extra dimension of power which comes for the forcing, to achieve that quality of forcing. That comes from an extra dimension. So it's interesting that what this is saying is that when we have a battle with ourselves, we're actually bringing into play a higher dimension of spirituality. So inspiration is something very beautiful and very fulfilling, but on that level it's relatively easy. It's the point where we have a challenge and we face the challenge. That's where we're using the higher dimension. And that's why very often the higher dimension is concerning action, because, you know, should I do this or should I not do this? And that's where the challenge is. You know, the non-kosher restaurant or the kosher restaurant. And so action, there's a beautiful image that there's a kind of a circle. And the circle, like inside the circle, are sort of higher levels of inspiration and enthusiasm. But the very lowest point of the circle is the level of action, which is often a matter of forcing. And that connects to the very highest level at the same time.
You understood it all. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Can you give us a sun waking?